And welcome to our feature today. And well, last week on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I was in Kansas City for the annual meeting of the National Association of Foreign Broadcasting. And on Thursday, we get an opportunity to visit with a lot of the newsmakers and market analysts, various companies that service agriculture, organizations, commodity groups, etc. So a lot of interviews that we were able to do out there that we'll try to pass along here over the next, a few weeks because of the number of interviews that we were able to do, some of them more timely maybe than others. So with that in mind, one of the people we were able to sit down and visit with, it had been a while since we had, and that was Jim Bauer, or Bauer Trading. And, we began our conversation talking about the markets with the question is there any reason whatsoever for corn and soybean prices to see any kind of potential rally going forward?
Well, I'm glad we got that crop report out of the way. I was worried about that all along, and unfortunately for the producers, it was not a good report pretty much across the board. The global stocks of soybeans maybe even a more neutral, but the other numbers in general were quite a disappointment. I don't know that I totally agree with them on some of the yields, but the market has to accept what they tell them. So the market will dial that in, and the next feature that we'll look at is basically what is or is not going to happen in the Southern Hemisphere, particularly Brazil. I mean, they've been talking 100 million metric ton crop out of Brazil now for the last 3 or 4 months. I think that's probably not going to happen already. My scout sent me a detailed report last night. He flew over most of the Mato Grosso the last several days. That northern part, quite a bit of it was still brown, which means it had not been planted yet. What had gotten planted did look pretty good, but there was still parts of that area which should have been planted several weeks ago, still hadn't seen a planter in the field yet. So we're watching that. It's plenty early. There's really no major damage yet, but he did make note that it was the driest and warmest that he had seen for this time of year in that part of the country of production in quite some time. And there's some isolated areas that haven't had any rain at all. So it's still plenty early. They can still salvage a great crop if they get rains later on. But I've already put an asterisk by the northern, or let's call it the northeast quadrant of Brazil, has got to be watched, including all of the Mato Grosso, Goiás, Bahia, Tocantins, all these areas in there that kind of encompass part or are on the edge of that northeast quadrant needs to be watched, because that's an area that could end up in trouble.
Well, it's interesting as you mention that, because I'm sitting here thinking, of course, the soybeans grown in South America, if memory serves me correct, are indeterminate. The beans we grow here in the United States are determinate. And basically, we plant them in, say, late April, May, they're going to mature with sunlight. That's not the case down there. Does that maybe give them a better opportunity to make this up, or maybe not give them as long a growing season because they don't get planted, and then that could actually hurt yields?
Well, keep in mind, a lot of that ground is basically what I call new ground. It's still full of stumps, some of it. So you're right. It's more of a non-determinate crop, which can be cruel from a maturity standpoint. But what I'm trying to say is, are they going to have a 100 million metric ton crop the way things are going right now? I would say probably not. I'm kind of down towards the 96, 97 million metric ton crop already. So I'm not saying there's going to be a problem in South America, but Mother Nature can turn her back on you pretty quickly. And I've been trading now 40 some years. I've seen her turn overnight. So granted, they can utilize the horsepowers that and technologies that have been implemented into the agricultural world like we do. And it's not as hard for them to farm as it used to be, kind of like what it was for us. But again, I think the biggest thing that we've got to watch is in the next 3 to 8 weeks is that what happens as far as the planting season in that northern half of Brazil. Let's see what happens there. Let's see what the value of the dollar is. The dollar, as you know, has approached par value. That, if you look at how that has impacted commodities in general, ever since they've raised the dollar back up towards par, we've lost and put the Bloomberg Commodity Index back near its contract low again. It tried to rally when the dollar was weakening, but when that dollar strengthens, boy, that really puts a hammer on commodities in general, including global commodities.
Well, and therein lies, so much of the market is a futures market, whether we're talking, the New York Stock Exchange or the Chicago Board of Trade and the futures options there. It's trading futures. I was surprised after the November crop report when I looked at the prices, the price ratio between corn and soybeans,
the market's almost telling us we need bean acres, and there must be something under there that we don't know that maybe the market does, and that may tie into your Brazil story.
One thing about that doggone bean market, how many times in a row has USDA said we're going to have, you know, 400 or 500 million carryover, and we end up 100 to 200? It seems like they constantly miss anywhere from 100 million to 250 million on demand. And every year that we increase our production, it seems like by the time the year's over, somebody's bought a lot more beans than they thought we were going to. Now, maybe that's going to come to a halt here with this, I guess, a higher level of competition from South America and a stronger dollar. But I don't know. With the Chinese economy, everybody says how bad it is. Is it? Do we really know how good it is or how bad it is? You know, it's still growing somewhere around 6%. There are young people, so they want protein, and they want it now. They can ill afford to have any bad crop years there. Well, in fact, we can ill afford to have any bad crop years in a major way in the United States or Europe or any place from a global standpoint. Things are that tight. It's just that we've had these great crops the last 2 years, particularly here in the United States. But, you know, the futures market, it is what it is. It looks to the future. They don't care what you know today. They care what you're looking at out ahead. And so my staff and I constantly try to come up with ideas and strategies that look ahead, not that are already in place. And right now we've been doing a lot of sell and defend strategies, sell the cash on a good basis. And by the way, there's some pretty good basis levels in the Eastern Corn Belt right now. And maybe take advantage of, you know, further price increase by using some kind of rich risk management tool that fits the risk management parameters about those individual customers. I can't stand marketing plans that everybody gets the same one, because it doesn't make sense to me. It never has over all these years. Why would you take a marketing plan that for you and give your neighbor or your uncle the same one? Because their situation probably is completely different. So, again, this is the type of market from a cash standpoint where we are constantly looking to take advantage of the basis, move the cash, and then defend it with some kind of strategy that fits the risk parameters of that individual client that he or she feels comfortable with.
Interesting, as you mentioned, the soybean and how, you know, we start out with a very high carryover and then it's been coming down to the ends. Makes me think of a very simple thing, but every elevator manager that I've talked to said the shrink and loss on storing soybeans is much greater than what it is on corn, so that if you put 100,000 bushels of soybeans in the bin over the scales in the fall, you may only take out, say, 94.
That's correct. I mean, the commercials will tell you that, and I believe that is correct. And that may be part of the reason why the market still doesn't know which way we want to go with corn and bean acreage for next year. I think that's going to be a major question out ahead. But let's not get too fast here now. We just finished this year's crop. It's in the bin now. Bin doors are going to be slammed shut. Padlocks are going to go on. Let's see just what develops here. But again, everything right now seems to be panicky in a certain sense. In this business, you don't want to panic. If you make a panicky decision, you look back, it'll haunt you for a long time. You want to use reasonable awareness. You want to use a reasonable amount of concern. But, you know, hopefully one of the things that my staff and at Bauer Trading and I help comfort people is that we use two heads are better than one. And what we try to do is that we're not always right. The customer's not always right, but by constantly monitoring back and forth what he or she is comfortable with, usually works out better.
It's, you know, I think about the scenario that you've kind of laid out here, and I can't help but wonder, does a trade get too far ahead of itself as well?
Well, it's very complex. It's not I've been doing this a long time, and it's gotten much more complex because of this global structure, this international pricing that we have to compete with. You know, the world's a much different place agriculture-wise than it was even 10 or 15 years ago with the technologies that we have and with the speed of movement of money. I mean, money comes and goes so fast now, it's just extraordinary. And the degree of sophistication of the U.S. farmer and rancher is very high. You get on the seat of a tractor that's pulling a 36 row planter. You know, what do you got here? This is something that is computerized. You can't make a mistake with it. And the older guys are having a harder time with that. And some of those older guys in the markets are having a harder time digesting how the changes in marketing are. But the big change that I see is, everybody says, well, we'll follow the marketing plan that, you know, my neighbor's using. Well, I'm so opposed to that. I want that customer to sit down on his or her own and formulate that plan that fits exactly their level of concern, their level of marketing skills, what they feel comfortable with. Because, you know, life is too short to be panicking because you've made a mistake on the futures market.
When we look at that report, of course, then we go to the supply-demand report. We look at feed usage and the ethanol usage, for example. And yet I look at what's happened to the cattle and the hog markets, and I can't help but wonder, you know, are there more pounds, more tonnage of beef and pork hitting the market? And is that reflected in what's being projected for feed use?
I think that's a good point. I think one of the things that maybe the USDA may be underestimating is that feed use for these expanding chicken, turkey, pork, feedlots, cattle. You know, that's something that's a dynamic that's constantly changing. The other thing is, you know, everybody says, well, we don't have any corn exports. Well, you know, yes, that's true. The corn export market has really fallen off, but that only represents about 13% of the crop. That's not the major usage factor. We got to go back to the feed and the ethanol situation. So, again, to me, it appears it could be the USDA could make a mistake quite easily misjudging, as they have to some degree in the past, just how much that demand is growing, particularly in soybeans. You know, I just alluded to that soybean market is tricky because they keep underestimating demand year after year for U.S. soybeans.
And I find it so intriguing because early in the harvest season, I had read articles from those who know that this year, like the corn, we took a lot of corn in central Illinois out under 14% moisture. A lot of beans came out at, you know, 8 to 10% moisture. There is what they call that ghost loss or dry matter loss. Does that come back and at some point, I mean, does a bushel of corn at, say, 12% moisture go as far in feeding hogs as, let's say, one at 16%?
Well, I'm not a hog producer, I'm not a hog trader, but I think you're on to something there. That would be a good question to answer, you know, one of the major universities to see if they've done any studies on that, like Purdue or University of Illinois. I don't know the answer to that, but that would be something that I would think would be quite interesting from a comparative standpoint and from a kind of a broader long-term usage standpoint, not just the United States, but globally. You can apply that theorem to global issues all over. But I do think the demand, as long as the dollar doesn't keep going higher from the current levels. Now, if this dollar keeps going higher, we're going to have a big problem because you can see the immediate impact almost daily to that commodity market through the Bloomberg Commodity Index. When that dollar rallies, that immediately puts pressure on those commodities. And I've traded the dollar, by the way, at as high as 120. Well, if we go to, I'm certainly not saying it's going to go there, but I mean, I never thought it should have gone to 120 to start with, but it did. So as long as we can keep this dollar, say, at par level or lower, then the market will find some way of increasing demand through the lower price and some kind of weather feature someplace, and then you better be ready to make some marketing skills.
So let me conclude by asking this. The function, the way the market operates, for every seller, there's a buyer. We know that the bears in the market have been selling the market. You mentioned the farmers have closed the bin door. You know, who's going to be on which side of the market for the next 2 months? Are the funds going to continue to try and push it lower? And if so, who's going to be the buyer? And then when the funds want to get out, who's going to be the buyer?
You know, the funds have not had a very good year. Most of them have really struggled and have had some pretty significant losses. And they've really curtailed their involvement with the commodity market in general, including the grains. I think they're going to kind of wait till probably after the first of the year to kind of see how things balance out. Obviously, they will watch the weather, but a lot of those funds have had such harsh losses. A lot of the dynamic and the way they have been moving those markets up and down may settle down a little bit. And we may go back to just basically trading kind of the old-fashioned way with the producers and the growers versus the commercial end users or exporters, kind of back and forth. So I think the game has going to shift away from the funds a little bit, more back towards the old way of doing business.
So not totally throwing in the towel on maybe seeing some price recovery in both in corn and beans, but before we get to planting time?
Again, I'm not as negative as a lot of the analysts are because I think we're going to have to put some risk premium in this market. I'm afraid of El Nino, and turning to a La Nina event. I talk to the meteorologist about once a week, and I get a good update. You know, this we're analoging 1935 right now, and of course 1936 in the United States was a disaster. But if you look at so far, of course that can change. But I'm willing to bet anybody about a steak dinner that we've had two big, or basically record crops in a row. I'll bet anybody a steak dinner that they won't have the third record crop in a row in the United States next year. So that's where my gamble is.
And again, that was Jim Bauer of Bauer Trading, and so we got the opportunity to visit with him out in Kansas City. And again, a lot more people that we were able to talk to, and over the course of the next 2 to 3 weeks, we'll try to get some of those interviews played for you.